I'm Father Mitch Pacwa, and welcome to EWTN Live, where we bring you guests from around the world. You all might be familiar with Father Edward J. Flanagan, who was the founder of Boys Town. And you might remember hearing about him in the 1938 Oscar-winning movie Boys Town that starred Spencer Tracy and Mickey Rooney. Great movie. But did you know that Father Flanagan was not some character created for the big screen in some fictional town for children built on a Hollywood backlot? No, Father Flanagan was a real Catholic priest who became a social reformer and a visionary and hero for changing the way America cared for its children and families. Now, thanks in part to Boys Town and to the Father Flanagan League, you can see a new documentary about Father Flanagan and his work with Boys Town this Saturday night, right here on EWTN. It'll be at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And the movie is called Heart of a Servant, the Father Flanagan Story. Let's take a short look at a clip from it.
My boys and I want to bring you a special message of peace.
Father Flanagan is an American success story. Came on Ellis Island with nothing in his pockets. He was somebody that saw the common humanity that we all share as brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ.
He was raising these boys not to be just good, but to be strong.
It wasn't just that those who disagreed with Father Flanagan were willing to sort of sit in the background. They tried to get in his way.
So he moved to the middle of a cornfield and started his own town.
When you examine why he did what he did and the conflicts that he took on, you're going to see the face of Jesus Christ in his work.
Joining us tonight from the Father Flanagan League, please welcome the Executive Vice President of the Father Flanagan League and the Director of Youth Care at Father Flanagan's Boys Town, Dr. Daniel L. Daly, PhD, and the President of the Father Flanagan League, Mr. Ed Morse. Thank you both for coming. Appreciate it.
It's a pleasure, Father. A pleasure, Father.
Thank you, Father.
Thank you so much to come all this way. This is a tremendous legacy that we have, right? Just outside Omaha. My impression is that Omaha is sort of growing up to the edge of Boys Town these days. It's not out in the cornfield anymore. But it really is a tremendous legacy that started during the Great Depression when people were so poor, they were sort of letting their kids go, you know, because they couldn't feed them. I remember seeing that movie about Seabiscuit, and the kid that eventually wrote it, his parents said, you have to leave because we can't afford you. Well, that's the situation that he was dealing with, as I recall.
That's exactly
so,
right.
So he's trying to deal with this. What is it that, there are a lot of things that y'all are doing. It's not just raising funds to keep Boys Town going, but there's a lot more about this whole approach and legacy of Father Flanagan. Ed, why don't you start?
The League is actually a distinct religious corporation. We're a separate nonprofit under the authority of our Archbishop from the Archdiocese of Omaha. And so we're separate from Boys Town, but we work closely with the leadership at Boys Town, and we've been involved in this process. I haven't been as involved as long as Dan has, but the League was formed about 20 years ago. Out of an outpouring of devotion that was coming then primarily from the alumni of Boys Town and toward Father Flanagan, and that has grown, and we're the actors in the cause for sainthood that's currently underway. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of what we're doing is telling Father Flanagan's story and sharing about his life and his heroic virtue with the world around us. Mm-hmm. And we think it has a lot to do with building up the church and one another. And yeah. So I think it's a story that can elevate and really inspire us, and it's something we need today.
And you yourself have not just been on this lead to promote this cause for beatification for Father Flanagan. You're part of the staff over at Boys County.
I am now retired, mm-hmm. Father. I'm now mm-hmm. retired, but I was on staff at Boys Town for 43 years and had a variety of roles there.
Yeah,
and,
Such as? What were some
of those roles? I directed our research program for a while. I trained the staff who worked directly with the kids mm-hmm. for several years. I ran what is called the home campus, which is the same campus that Father Flanagan developed. In fact, I had his office at that point in time.
Is that right?
And I had some conversations with Father Flanagan from time to time. And then I became director of youth care for the last 12, 13 years of my career there. But Father Flanagan, I can't separate talking about him without also talking about Boys Town. But for me, his heroic virtue in the process of being on the board now that's promoting his potential sainthood is Father Flanagan was all around us at Boys Town during the 43 years I was there, all around the boys and girls, all around the staff there. His presence is very palpable on that campus due to the legacy he has left.
You know, that's one of the characteristics of founders. You know, that when they do a good job, they pass on, you know, a specific way of doing a task. Whether it's the founder of a religious order, certainly Mother Angelica had a big impact on the founding of this place and how we continue to operate. It sounds that Father Flanagan's success is that he received a, as we say in the church, a charism, a gift from the Holy Spirit to take care of these children, and it's passed on to many others. You know, it's a charism given to him so he could give it away, and it sounds like that's what he did.
You know, Boys Town did a remarkable job too in curating. They have the Hall of History. Tom Lynch is a mutual friend of ours who's the director of that, is like a walking encyclopedia. But in that Hall of History, they preserved all this documentary evidence, the photographs, other memorabilia, the 1938 Oscar won by Spencer Tracy is in there, and other things.
Did he give his Oscar?
He received it on behalf of Father Flanagan and gave it to Father Flanagan as a gift. He dedicated it to it. So it's on. We had the Oscar with us when we did the film premiere last fall. And it was kind of remarkable because it's an iconic item that a simple person like me would have no access to, and yet there it is. And it did represent something magical about that time.
Yeah. Showed up in a parcel post within a week after he received it, gifted to Father Flanagan.
No kidding. And Tracy himself loved his Catholic faith. He had a lot of internal personal conflicts and you know, the issues that, you know, reconciled, but he loved the faith very much.
Very much so.
Just trouble sometimes living it. But this is a struggle that people have. And I think that's one of, it showed up in the way that he lived out and acted in that movie.
Father Jeff Molnar is currently a pastor. There's a Catholic Church of Immaculate Conception on the campus. And Father Flanagan's tomb is there also. So there is that physical presence that is there that does attract many to come. But Father Jeff Molnar is the pastor there now, and he is very engaged in trying to spread the word about Father Flanagan and devotion to Father Flanagan among their staff and their students, so that legacy is very important to them, and I think that is continuing. And you know, you can have a founder whose influence fades away, mm-hmm. or you can have a founder whose influence continues and even grows over time. And I think the latter is the case here.
It sounds like it. And just so we make clear something, my impression has always been that while there's this Catholic Church there, Boys Town was never limited only to Catholic children.
There's a famous saying Father Flanagan gave uh-huh. to the world, and it was, every boy must learn to pray. That was part of his program, how he prays is between he and God. Mm-hmm. And statistically, his first home that he founded, he founded two other homes before he founded the village of Boys Town that he hit when they get too many kids, it'd move. But they were always 60 to 70% not Catholic kids, a certain mm-hmm. amount of Jewish boys,
right.
and then 22% Catholic. And that continues through today.
Yeah.
All faiths are welcome, but faith is promoted. Faith is promoted.
And you got a sense from that movie and from what people have told me about that, there was great respect for the people of each faith. The Jewish kids were respected for their Judaism, and the Catholic kids and the Protestant kids and so on. I don't know if there are many Muslim kids
there are a few Muslim kids. Mm-hmm. And there's a Tri-Faith Chapel, which was within a mile of the Boys Town campus, mm-hmm. and it's Protestant, Catholic, and Islamic. And we work with an imam there for the Islamic boys or girls, you know, to continue their faith. And there happens to be a Jewish church very close by, and Boys Town has worked with that rabbi of that church basically forever.
That's good. Yeah. That's good that the synagogue does that with you. Again, to have that respect so that people aren't partisan about sending their kids there or something, that this is about taking care of the kid and his growth. But this jumps to another issue. One is that Father Flanagan saw how essential it was for each kid to have a relationship with God, that prayer and being in a real relationship with God, again, with the different traditions and backgrounds, but that was not something that was icing on the cake. That was the cake.
That was an essential part of him improving the lives of these boys. He first worked with boys because they were the street kids in those days. Mm-hmm. But he had two items. One was love, that the way an adult interacts with a boy is going to determine this boy's future. In the past, he would have aggressive adults, abusive adults, or neglectful adults. He's either a fearful child or an angry child. Mm-hmm. Love was the way through both problems. Mm-hmm. And the second element was he needs to develop a relationship with God. That's where he's going to learn how to have a good life. That's where he's going to learn the skills to interact with others. That's where he's going to learn the skills to follow the law. That's where he's going to bond on his own personal education, both spiritual education and occupational education. And those were his two components, and God and faith was an essential part.
Because, again, from your background in psychology, one of the risks for a lot of people who are not in a stable family relationship is that they never learn empathy. And there's a real risk of becoming sociopathic or psychopathic because of that lack of empathy. And it's precisely showing love to kids. Again, Mickey Rooney played that well.
That's right.
You know, that he was moving towards sociopathy himself, but he, you know, changed. And that's a key element.
Father Flanagan was really a revolutionist in this area, because most homes for kids, including orphanages, mm-hmm. there was a lot of harshness, a lot of coldness, a lack of warmth. Yes. And Father Flanagan said, all of these children, the first thing they need is they need a loving adult in their life. They may not have had, as you said, some of them lacked parental guidance because of deaths in their family of both parents. We have all kinds of horrible stories there. But if it went to a unloving institution for guidance, that boy or that girl was in deep trouble. Yeah. And they would learn up, would grow up being angry about society, angry about their life. Father Flanagan right away saw, I can intervene with love and with warmth and with affection, and that will be the start of the healing process. And I now teach them how to have a relationship with their Creator and to have a faith life, whatever faith that might be. I can rehabilitate these kids.
I remember a psychological, or part of it is our psychology classes, when in the post-war period, there were a lot of war orphans who had gone to Brazil to escape Europe and the devastation, and including lots of babies. And they had all the food, all the medicine they needed, but they were dying. And they realized they needed to be held. And they just got these ladies to come in and hold them. Every day they'd go from one kid to another. And the dying stopped. It's that, again, it's that need for an adult to be showing love to the kid, and nothing of a self-interested love, a love that's for the sake of the kid, not what the adult is getting out of it.
That's exactly right. And a big part of Father's heroic virtue was the fact that he was willing to take on a whole country's culture about how these kids were being raised.
People, how do you mean he took on the culture?
Well, the culture within the, there was no juvenile court at the time that he founded Boys Town. There was only an adult court. And he literally took in kids who may have, he had some kids who had murdered a parent, an abusive parent. But he took on many cases of kids who the community wanted locked up and wanted punishment for. They wanted them in jail, even as a 10 or a 12-year-old. And Father Flanagan used to go to juvenile court, look at the docket, and when he saw a 10-year-old on the docket, a 12-year-old on the docket, he would sit in the courtroom and view that child as a potential former future resident of Boys Town.
Yep. I'd like to show another clip from this movie, Heart of a Servant, the Father Flanagan story. It's talking to Ed Flanagan, who's the great nephew of Father Flanagan's. So let's take a quick look at that.
We had a picture in our house of him. I remember the day that I pointed, I said, who is that? My dad said, that's Father Flanagan. And then he told me all about Boys Town. My name's Ed Flanagan. I was named after Father Ed. I'm the great nephew of Father Flanagan. I came here as a kid myself. My mom died when I was 6. And so my dad traveled. Luckily, there was a place like Boys Town for us to come to. It saved our lives, I'm sure. I was in heaven when I came here. Right next here, that was the building right over there. That was our clothing store. We went there and I got new clothes. Oh my gosh, nice clothes. And then we had sports, we could play every day. I don't know why everybody didn't want to come here. Yeah, it was, we were lucky. We were very fortunate. And you know, the bond that we all had, you know, because we all had obstacles to overcome. They may have been different in certain ways, but in the end, we were all struggling. I think that's the bond that we have. There's this friend of mine that she doesn't understand why I come out here and do all the football games all the time. Well, I said, this isn't a normal high school. This is our home. Yeah, that's the difference. This is our home.
Is that right?
Back in the early 80s.
Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah.
How many kids are at Boys Town? Because it's now Boys and Girls,
it's
right?
It's now Boys and Girls. The name is still Boys Town. There's about 425 to 450 on campus on any given day.
Okay.
But there's many thousands of kids in other locations around the country and many thousands of kids being cared for by Boys Town each year.
Yeah. Okay. Now, part of what the Father Flanagan League does is work for this, for the cause of his beatification and eventually canonization as a saint. Has anything been started on this? What's going on with that?
Yes, we're really well along in the process. We've completed the diocesan phase, so there's a first phase of investigation that happens at the diocesan level and produces a positio, a document that really summarizes the examination of the entire life and work of Father Flanagan. And that's been forwarded to now the Vatican. It's in the Dicastery of the Cause of the Saints. And they're in the process of reviewing all that documentation. And so if right now his title is Servant of God, and if the dicastery finds him worthy and suitable, then he'll be named Venerable. And then the process would continue after that. We'll need to document some miracles. And so there's a lot of work ahead and a lot of things that'll need to be done yet and need to happen, and much of it is in God's hands, but we're doing our part.
And that first stage is always the examination of the life and character of the person. You know, what kind of life did they live, so that you're looking for not only a holy people. The church is a source of much holiness, but you look for someone who is heroically holy, and you have to examine all the things they taught. In the case of someone like Father Flanagan, so that there's no error taught, you know, but also this heroic quality of their religious life. That's examined first. Then, after that's what gets them to venerable, then the process of how many miracles to become a blessed?
Just one.
One.
And then we need two. You need two for sainthood.
So, okay.
And the church's view of miracles is much more rigorous and scientific than the vernacular understanding.
Yes. They don't include finding a parking place in Manhattan.
Right. Right.
We get this from the Boys Town alums. They said, my life is a miracle. You know, because I've experienced transformation. I've experienced a change in direction, a change in heart. And I think there are many miracles like that that we experience all the time that truly are miraculous, but It's actually a credit to the church that we view these things much more rigorously, and yet they stand up under much more strict scrutiny.
It has to be a very clear, definite evidence of divine interaction
yes.
in response to Father Flanagan's prayers.
Yes. So not only must the scientific community be satisfied with respect to the miraculous nature, could not be caused by natural explanations.
I got healed of cancer, and it was just miraculous. They don't count that. It's when you get healed of the cancer, and the medicine wasn't a factor.
And then the second step is you've got to connect it with intercessions that are connected to Father Flanagan and not to other efficient intervening causes. And so that's a difficult thing to show sometimes.
That's something that is a very important part of this, that the church doesn't just sort of want to, you know, wave a hand and bam, y'all are saints. Thank you for playing, but that's not what we do.
Right.
You know, it's again looking for individuals that the rest of the church can say, I want to be like him.
Right.
And which is what is going on at Boys Town. You have a staff that, what he did, that's what I want to do.
That's exactly right.
But do you want this guaranteed, by the church to say, this is somebody we trust. He wasn't on the take. He wasn't just some monkey. You know, he just gave of himself, which is the case. But now we look for God to approve of this.
That's right.
That's where the miraculous comes in.
You know. Part of that process involves this groundswell or outpouring of devotion that is coming from others, you know, who have recognized the heroic virtue and who have been influenced and touched by his life. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's a population of people who have been through the institutional care, but there are many others who have. And I shouldn't use the word institution because he didn't view it as an institution; he viewed it as a home.
Right.
As consistent with this attitude of love, and you know, earlier on you mentioned the problems of poverty, etc., during the Great Depression and even preceding that, mm-hmm. because we didn't have the same level of social safety nets. But it's just so important to realize that you can solve material poverty problems. You can feed. You can do those other things. Those things are very important. But the government is not very good at loving. And so when human beings are not like, I'm a cattle person, they're not like feeder cattle. You throw them some hay and some silage and water and they're good. No, they need something more. And so Father Flanagan's role really did kind of play a long game with human beings in terms of looking at formation. And that type of approach has inspired many other people. So we have people, back home in his homeland in Ballymoe that are regularly doing a prayer group. Another fellow is doing one out in Hawaii. And so we have people that have come to know and appreciate Father Flanagan, and their own spiritual lives are being influenced. And that's, I think, also a very positive sign for heroic virtue, but also the qualities of sainthood.
And I would just add, we have to take a break, but I would just add, there's a great image for the intercession of the saints in the book of Revelation, chapter 5, where the elders are around the throne of God, and they all have golden bowls of incense, which are the prayers of the saints. And I use that as an image for folks that don't understand why we ask the saints for intercession. Incense, I use incense a lot, and the nuggets of incense smell good. But when you set them on hot coals, you release an aroma that fills the room. The individual or a handful of incense, you can put it up to you and you smell it. But when you put it on a coal, you fill the whole church with the aroma. And that's what the saints do. They take our nuggets of incense, and they set them on fire before God's throne. Well, we have to take a little break. We're going to come back for some questions and answers, and want to encourage y'all to watch Heart of a Servant, the Father Flanagan story. That'll be on December 13th at 8 p.m. Eastern time. That's a Saturday. And then December 15th at 1:30 a.m. Eastern time. It'll be on EWTN as well as on the website, EWTN.com. So we'll be back in 2 minutes. We want to get some of your questions and your comments. So please stay with us. We're speaking to Mr. Ed Morse, who's the president of the Father Flanagan League, and Dr. Dan Daly, who's a board secretary of the Father Flanagan League. He's also the former director of care for them. And if you want to find out more about this, you can go to fatherflanagan.org, fatherflanagan.org. and learn more about the Father Flanagan League. One of the things that we were talking about is Father Flanagan's sanctity, you know, the holiness about him. And I think we've got a clip that addresses that. It's from this movie, Heart of a Servant, the Father Flanagan story, and it talks about his saintly virtue. Let's take a look at that, and then we'll discuss it.
Father was always responding to the call of the Spirit. Imagine the courage of taking on the responsibility of caring for children who aren't your own, and children who were seen by society as problems, and then having the courage to accept more and more. He was always responding to what the Lord put in front of him. And even though he was a priest, and even though he lived a long time ago, and even though he was from Ireland and all those things that make him different, in the end, and this is really what he proved, we're all the same.
Love can't be contained. Love cannot be contained. The fact that we can sit here and talk about him today and remember the kind of courage and love that he had, I hope inspires so many of us to continue his legacy, to continue his work as believers in Jesus Christ, that we should be motivated by love to care for our brothers and sisters and not be fearful for what the world is going to do to us for doing that.
We Catholic Christians who are striving to become saints ourselves, we need role models. We need to see that men and women of every time and place, every age and education level, every walk of life, that they can and do become saints. And that this is something that with God's help and with his grace is something that each and every Catholic Christian not only can attain, but should be striving to attain. I absolutely think Father Flanagan's a saint. More importantly, as a canon lawyer, I would say I have found nothing that would suggest he's not a saint. Everything that I found in this investigation, which I consider one of the great graces of my life in priesthood, has led me to even more firmly believe what I think I've believed for some time, namely that Father Edward J. Flanagan is a saint.
So this is, again, we have canon lawyers and moralists examine their life and everything we have that they ever wrote, all of that. Some of your own reflections on his sanctity, because it's obviously been something that attracted y'all to work with the Father Flanagan League. So what is it that sort of helped make that connection? And you, having worked there, did you actually know him?
No, I did not. No, he died in 1948.
Many years prior to.
His sanctity to me was the fact that he took the gospel. He saw the face of Jesus Christ in every boy he worked with. Mm-hmm. The boy's race, the boy's religion was irrelevant. What the boy had done prior to coming to Boys Town was irrelevant. He saw the face of God, he saw the potential, and he was willing to go the long mile with that boy and to give him affectionate, loving care and guidance to further his faith. And that was his sanctity. I mean, he was doing it in the real world. Yes, he was doing it in his special devotion to the Blessed Mother. His role models were St. Patrick and St. John Bosco, you know, as two of his big role models, and also Mother Teresa. He had a relationship, that long-distance relationship there. And so that, to me, is all manifestation of his sanctity.
It sounds like he had a connection with Mother Teresa before most of the world knew her. If he died in 48,
yes,
that's pretty early on.
That's right.
Her work,
that's right,
with the poorest of the poor.
Yeah, that's right. And interesting enough, years later, she came to Boys Town after his death, considerably after his death, and received an award, the Father Flanagan Service to Youth Award.
Oh, nice.
You know,
nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, how about you, Ed?
You know, I'm inspired by several things, but one of them is his persistence, because, you know, he was born a premature baby, and he had health issues, and he persisted. He never let those weaknesses become a block to his mission and his goal of becoming a priest. He had difficulties earlier in his life with his health and this going to the seminary. He had to go back and forth a couple of different times.
But back and forth from where to
Well, he actually came to Omaha for a while, and then he went to a seminary in New York. He had to withdraw. He came here to Omaha to live with his brother and his sister. His brother was a priest in Omaha. Then he regained some of his health with their care and went back to Rome to seminary. His health issues reemerged, and he had to come back home again here to Omaha, and then ended up finishing his seminary training in Austria. So it was quite a circuitous route, and I think he was denied admission to a seminary in Ireland. So it's like people want to close doors, or circumstances want to close doors, and when he had a mission, he was going for it. And I think that kind of grit and determination influenced the rest of his life. He would face resistance, and he would deal with it very forthrightly, so I think that persistence is quite a virtue. And the other thing, though, is he's a thoughtful guy. Mm-hmm. He is a person who he studied human nature. When he had his first work of mercy was not the Boys Town, but it was called the Working Man's Hotel. He was dealing with homeless adult men. Mm-hmm. And so he would learn about them. He took notes, copious notes, about their stories. And in the evenings, he would review the stories. And these were the cases. These were the case studies that he was saying. And it eventually leads him to make the conclusion that we need to devote our efforts on the front end rather than after the fact, after adulthood and the habituation of the mind and all those things that have already happened. We need to address these things up front. So this curiosity, this willingness to study and to adapt to the conditions of the world in which he found himself, I think are both really praiseworthy characters.
He did a follow-up study of those men that he worked with and learned that they weren't working. They were still had their substance abuse problem. And so he approached this as a scholar of human behavior. He read all the major great psychologists of the time. He was current with scholarly literature as well as applying scholarship to the work that he was doing day to day.
So, on one hand, you know, you came to Boys Town to do a lot of work on that psychological level. That's your expertise and your training.
Right.
and to make sure you could train the staff and deal with the situation with the boys and all that. But that was, it sounds like that's a continuation of his willingness to incorporate the psychology and other modern tools that give us some insights into how to raise kids to become mature adults.
Very much so, very much so. He was a scholar, he believed in research, he believed in applying his intellect to the problem, not just his effort. And, you know, there's a phrase that he used to use, this work will continue not because it's my work, but because it's God's work. Mm-hmm. And as a psychologist, to be able to use something like that to motivate staff who felt like they're failing with a particularly difficult boy or girl, mm-hmm. and to say, what would Father Flanagan have done with this child? What would he have done? It's a tremendous advantage in working with the adults, not just with the children,
because you could be dealing with their own sense of failure.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So he was a role model for them to to maintain the fight, to maintain the struggle.
And as you say that, you know, you mentioned before the struggles he had to get into the seminary, rejected in Ireland. Once he did get in, to stay in because of his health. And, you know, in all that, it seems as if sometimes God our Lord is helping individuals to learn this isn't something that's just your thing. It's not just your idea. This is my idea. But you're going to learn, you're weak, I'm strong. We can work together now.
That's right.
And I think that's what kind of happened. I'd like to show another clip from that movie, Heart of a Servant, the Father Flanagan story, and just get some of Father Flanagan himself speaking. Let's take a look.
Back in 1917, I was assistant pastor in a church in Omaha. In my spare time, I ran a shelter for homeless boys. One night, on my way home in the rain, I saw a small boy standing on a street corner. He was wet and muddy and forlorn. I asked him where he lived, but he just snarled, "Ah, go away and leave me alone. You guys are always trying to get me into trouble." I told him I was only trying to help. Finally, he told me he didn't have a home. He had been sleeping in dark alleys and stealing to keep alive. But Mr. Ellman, he didn't look like a bad boy to me. I found a place for him to stay that night. That boy started me thinking about the thousands of other boys just like him. And suddenly I had an idea. Why not start a home for boys where they could learn to get along in society and take their place in the world, a home they'd run themselves?
That was his voice?
That was his voice.
You know, I wouldn't have picked him for an Irishman. You know, he sounds like somebody that could have been born and raised in the Midwest.
Right, right.
You know, he didn't have a particularly strong Irish accent,
right,
like I would have expected.
Yeah.
But he sounds like he may have adapted his voice to fit into the Midwest.
I'm sure he did. He came over at age 18.
Yeah, that's,
you know, and
not easy to get rid of your accent.
That's exactly right.
Yeah,
that's exactly right.
He was quite a user of media. He had radio programs on the local radio, on the WOW radio before the television stations emerged. He had a regular radio show. And so he was very much a curious person who was willing to adapt to the technologies of the day and find ways to communicate. Mm-hmm. And he had to do this because he needed to tell the story of what he was doing with the boys to raise support from the public, because it was like, okay, you know, the Lord gives you this vision. And I think in his case, it's something he discovered. You know, he goes and does the work, he does the next right thing, and he discovers this mission. And then once the vision catches fire and he wants to continue that work, it's like, how do I have the resources to do it? And the only way he could do that was to get other people on board. Right. And this is a remarkable trait as well.
Well, this is what two things you hear from the saints. One, there's a significant group of very holy folks who recognized that the media were very important for the spread of the gospel. Mm-hmm. You think of St. Maximilian Kolbe, who did that. Marconi himself, the inventor of radio, set up one of the earliest radio stations in the Vatican. It's still going. And our own Mother Angelica also, said we got to get into these media. Though, as she put it, Lord, I got to have one of these TV stations. That was her line. And obviously have one.
He saw his ministry as worldwide.
Yeah.
And Roosevelt and Truman asked him to go to Germany and to Japan after the war because there'd be so many homeless boys and girls due to the bombings that took place, And one mission that he partially accomplished, he went to Ireland in 1946, mm-hmm. and he found that their institutions were even worse than the ones that he found in America. Mm-hmm. And the Irish basically asked him to leave the country because he called them out on it. It's, again, part of his courage. And he had plans to return to Ireland, but he died prior to being able to do that in 1948.
How old was he when he died?
He was 62 when he died.
What? Well, by our standards, that's young, but that wasn't so unusual back then.
Prior to his visit to Germany, he expressed to those he was intimate with and his family, etc., my health is not so good right now, but God and President Truman want me to go to Europe. I need to do this.
Yeah.
And he was over there and died in Berlin in 1948.
He died in Berlin?
He died in Berlin after a particularly long day working with orphanages, politicians, people part of the political system working with children. Died in the middle of the night that night.
God rest his soul. Yeah. But that's a tremendous amount that he was doing. And, to see how that need moved through the Great Depression and into the immediately into the war and the post-war period, because that was a tremendous amount. My father joined the Moose International because they had an orphanage, and he knew that if something happened to him or my mom, that we would be taken care of as members of that. Yeah. But that was a concern. There were probably a couple hundred thousand kids in orphanages in that post-war period, even in this country.
Exactly. As Ed mentioned, that Father Flanagan, he took on these unpopular causes at risk to his own life, but he was willing to do that. And he had to have partnerships. He was in debt his whole career. And he would always say, because God will help us, God will help us. And then he would get himself and his staff to work like crazy to raise whatever dollars they needed. Yeah. But he always held a mortgage. He had a mortgage his entire career. And he barely made payment, but he kept expanding, kept increasing the effort. And his effort caused spontaneity of people joining his cause because they recognized the goodness of what he was doing, be his donors Catholic or Protestant. He had as many not Catholic donors as he had Catholic donors.
Well, in the movie, one of the characters is a Jewish man that was helping him.
That's right.
He's a graduate of my law school, Creighton University.
Oh, is that right?
And
That Jewish man?
Yes, yeah. Henry Monsky. And in fact, I walk by his picture every day on the way to my office. I would say hello to him because I think he's a remarkable man too. I think you can make a documentary out of him because of his cooperation and collaboration. And, he was the chairman of the board of directors of Boys Town once it became a separate corporation. And, through people like Henry Monsky and his connections in the business community, Father generated quite a bit of the support coming out of people. So this just shows you your vocation may be to pursue business, to do meatpacking or whatever it is, and then, hey, take some of that treasure and help. And that's what he was able to do through the friendships with people like Henry Monsky, who had connections and relationships, and those relationships could translate into support for his mission and vision.
But again, it seems that Mr. Monsky also caught the fire of this charism, and he was not a Christian. That was no impediment of any kind to just understanding this is a need. I've got resources.
Yeah.
He may not have been able to live and run Boys Town, but he knew how to network resources so Father Flanagan could do it. This is why it takes the whole church. And, and though Mr. Monsky was a part of the church, he was someone that God inspired to show this loving generosity.
But there were Jewish orphans too. It's like, so that was his connection. And that's why the Father Flanagan's approach was every boy will pray in his own tradition. And that was reassuring to someone like Henry Monsky, who did not want a forced conversion or a forced baptism. And from Father Flanagan's perspective, it's really taking the long view. It's looking at the gospel and the power of truth and saying, hey, right now these kids are in crisis. What I need to do is solve the crisis and get them on a foundation. And, like many of us, I'm a Catholic convert. I'm drawn to the beauty and the truth. It took me a long journey to get there, but when you have confidence in that, I think you're doing the Lord's work.
Yeah. And so folks understand, we're not talking about orphans because of the Great Depression anymore, nor war orphans, but we have 52% of all children born to unmarried parents. Mm-hmm. And it's not only that most typically the father abandons them, frankly, but sometimes their mothers abandon them. And there are these other, I would call them the orphans of the French, of the sexual revolution, not mm-hmm. the French Revolution, but they had plenty too. But the orphans of the sexual revolution who are flailing around on their own. This is why it's a continuing need to do this. And I want to, we only have a couple minutes left, but I'd like people to know that, again, you can find out more about all this ongoing work for our own problem that comes from the sexual revolution mostly by going to the Father Flanagan League's website, which is fatherflanagan.org, fatherflanagan.org. We also encourage you to watch this movie, Heart of a Servant, the Father Flanagan story. That'll be on our network December 13th, Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and also on December 15th at 1:30 a.m. Eastern Time on regular EWTN television. But you can also find it at EWTN.com. Also, before we go, I want to give a big thank you to one of our broadcast engineers, Sky Park. He's been here for 20 years doing service to the network. Tonight is his last show before he retires. We're very thankful for all that Sky has done over these 20 years to keep the network on the air. Sometimes things are just falling apart. All of a sudden, Sky's in there. So thank you, Sky, and God bless you. And Doug Keck, who's retiring, and a couple other folks that are retiring. Thank you all. I want to thank you for coming all this way to be with us. I appreciate you being with us.
Thank you, Father. Thank you.
And may the Lord bless you and your work and guide you in all of your ways. May he lead you by his peace. And may God bless you, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And we can bring you the story about Father Flanagan and all the other programs we do only because this network is brought to you by you. And in this season when we have some new expenses, we really appreciate you keeping us in between your gas bill, your electric bill, and your cable bill, or at least between some of the Christmas present bills. God bless you all and thank you.